Welcome to MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue, and we're coming to you from the campus of Middle Tennessee State University in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and the studios of WMOT-FM. Social media are touted as boons to the advertising industry, but are they really? While Twitter and Google have had some success, Facebook remains something of a question mark. You would think that the most popular social media organ of them all would have buku advertising revenue, but that doesn't necessarily hold true. Dr. Michelle Beecham, who is an associate professor of marketing here at MTSU, has written an article called "Don't Invade My Personal Space, Facebook's Advertising Dilemma," and we'll find out what sorts of challenges Facebook faces after these words from MTSUnews.com.
Here are some of the stories now on MTSUnews.com, the university's news and information website. An MTSU professor's study shows employees generally are more polite when talking to male bosses than when they speak to female bosses. The research of Dr. Xiaowei Shi examined 212 full-time employees at white-collar workplaces in Indiana, California, and Ohio. East of the Sun and West of the Moon, a book arts exhibit by MTSU students and children from Norway and Denmark, is on display through August 16th at the Todd Art Gallery on campus. Inspired by a Scandinavian folk tale, the exhibit illustrates the children's stories about overcoming obstacles. And registration is underway for girls to attend the 2013 MTSU Expanding Your Horizons in Science and Mathematics Conference. The hands-on event helps girls in grades 5 through 12 investigate math and science careers. For MTSU News at any time, go to mtsunews.com.
Dr. Beecham, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Your article is written, it was published in the January-February 2013 edition of the Journal of Applied Business Research. And basically, what you're saying is that Facebook users like to put a perimeter around their social existence online and sort of resent the invasion of advertising while they're trying to communicate with their friends. Is that basically it?
That's correct. At the time that I actually wrote the paper, Facebook had just IPO'd, and there was a lot of speculation on the price of Facebook stock, and that was all tied to advertising and Facebook's ability to harness user information. And one of the things that I looked at in the paper were roles, and specifically consumer roles and social roles on Facebook, where people like to create boundaries around those roles, and they kind of want the ability to choose whether or not those boundaries are infringed upon. And so Facebook advertising tends to infringe upon the boundaries that are surrounding our social roles on Facebook.
According to a survey that you cite in the paper, the Facebook users seem to be stating conflicting things. There is a study that was done by Insight Strategy Group. It says 58% of respondents describe social media marketing as invasive, 60% say brand communication is annoying, and 64% hate receiving targeted messages, but 53% in the same study think a brand has to have a Facebook page, 54% appreciate when a brand has a Facebook page, and 58% followed brands on Facebook to receive special promotions and deals. So what do they really think and feel?
I think the issue is whether or not you choose to follow that particular brand page, because when a brand has a Facebook page, you can go in and like that page, and by liking it, you're saying it's okay for that brand or that company to put messages into my newsfeed. So it's your decision to follow that brand. I think the portion of that study that cites the annoyance and the hatred toward Facebook advertising is more towards the advertising that they're not approving of or the ones that they're not consenting to. So I think that there's a big difference between giving the person control over what information they would like to receive about products and brands and then just targeting them, you know, just based on their demographic information that's available.
Can Facebook take the likes information, the likes statistics, and use that to channel their advertising?
They can. They can give that ability to companies. And one of the really interesting things with the Facebook IPO was about 3 days prior to that, GM, which is the second largest advertiser in the United States, actually pulled all of their paid Facebook advertising 3 days prior to the IPO. And one of the big things that they cited as a reason was they didn't have the ability to track the effectiveness of the advertising. They didn't think that Facebook advertising was really influencing what people purchased. And until they had a better mechanism to get a tracking device or a tracking procedure in place, they didn't want to spend a portion of their advertising expenditure on Facebook advertising. One of the really interesting things is that just recently they've actually gone back to test marketing on Facebook. So Facebook has made some significant changes in terms of the way that they allow advertisers to look at information and to target consumers. And based on that, General Motors thinks that, you know, it might be worth another shot. And their campaign is actually for the Chevrolet Sonic, and it's the first completely social media advertising campaign. So
it's totally on Facebook, or they're using other social media in addition?
I think they're using other social media in addition to that, but I'm not 100% sure. I think that's what I read, was that there aren't going to be any print or any other types of media other than social media. So I'm assuming that they would use a combination, but I'm really not sure about that.
So what did Facebook do? What changes did it make to make GM think that it might be worth their money again?
Well, at the time that they actually pulled their advertising, they hadn't implemented logout ads yet. They hadn't quite figured out mobile advertising via the Facebook app. And so they've definitely made those changes. But they've also, within the last month or so, created something called Facebook Exchange, which is a new way to kind of target and track consumers. And they also have one that they just launched a few days ago that is called Lookalike Targeting, where you can target consumers that look a lot like your existing customer base. So they've really made dramatic changes in the last year or so in terms of how you can target and track advertising on Facebook. So I think based on those, they felt like it was worth test marketing.
So they can zero in more closely on their target demographic now and not waste time on demos that would not be concerned with their product.
Right. And actually, there's a difference between Facebook Marketplace advertising and the Facebook Exchange program that just launched within a month. And as a user, we don't really get to see the difference between those two programs. But one of them uses actual your interests and your demographics, and they can mine that through Facebook, and that's the marketplace advertising. Mm-hmm. The exchange program actually works with outside companies that help you to track online behavior and cookies outside of the Facebook website. So that one is very new and, you know, should be really interesting to see how it unfolds.
We'll be back with more in just a moment. This is MTSU on the Record.
The Concrete Industry Management Program at MTSU fills the need for trained personnel who know concrete technology and techniques. Our alumni go into the marketplace grounded in basic math and science and able to promote products or services related to the industry. Our participation in the Academic Common Market ensures talented students in other states a chance to enroll on an in-state tuition basis. This is Dr. Heather Brown, Director of the program.
To find out more information on this or other university programs, visit mtsunews.com.
We're talking about Facebook's advertising and its effectiveness or lack thereof with Dr. Michelle Beecham, who is an assistant professor of marketing here at MTSU. You talk about different theories for why Facebook users are rejecting some of the advertising, and they have to do with roles and the definition of roles and how we define those roles or put limits on those roles. Talk a little bit about the three theories that you mentioned in the article for the Journal of Applied Business Research.
Well, the first theory has to do with role theory, and people adopt certain roles based on their position in society. And so individuals are more likely to adopt multiple roles at one time. And with those roles come some expected behaviors that kind of go along with it. And the two roles that really come into question are your role as a social adult and your role as a consumer. And both of them carry with them expected behaviors and things that we commonly do as a person taking on that role. With these roles, because you have so many roles, people like to simplify things. And so what they are likely to do is create boundaries or mental fences around the different roles. And what these boundaries do is they help to kind of hold together the behaviors and the expectations that are associated with the different roles that they adopt. And so these boundaries really kind of come into play with boundary theory. And the deal with boundary theory is whether or not those boundaries are flexible or permeable. If a boundary around a role is flexible, it means that that role, those behaviors can be enacted at any time and at any place. So you don't have to necessarily be in the domain of the role to engage in those behaviors. Social roles and consumer roles are very flexible. We can be social in any setting, at any time, in any place. And because of the internet and our ability to shop online and outside of brick and mortar stores, the consumer role also is flexible.
But you can also be social and consumer at the same time. Absolutely. In a brick and mortar place. If Betty and Madge bump into each other at the supermarket, they can discuss, you know, whether LeSueur peas taste better or cost more than other brands of peas, right?
Absolutely. And so those two roles, they're likely to be brought together based on this flexibility of boundaries between the two roles. So because we can enact either of the roles in any place and at any time, theory says that we're more likely to have those two roles brought together and integrated in a setting. The other thing that comes into play in addition to flexibility is permeability. And that has to do with whether or not you can be in one role's domain. So we could be here on MTSU's campus in our employee roles, but we could psychologically be somewhere else.
Right.
We could be on Facebook or we could be socializing. And that's what permeability is all about. And so with consumer roles and with social roles, not only are the boundaries flexible, but they're also permeable.
In the world of commerce, even before the internet, the social and consumer roles, I mean, not only overlapped like concentric circles, but they sort of intertwined, because a little social lubrication, as any salesperson will tell you, goes a long way toward helping you sell your product or service, right?
Absolutely. So that's where it really becomes interesting. Because they're flexible and because they're permeable, we're more likely to bring them together and socialize while we shop. But when we get on Facebook is where it becomes a little different, because that's an electronic domain. So unlike a domain here on campus where we're face-to-face, we don't have the control to make sure that those boundaries are separate. But on Facebook, I think we would like to have those controls.
Are Facebook users being somewhat unrealistic in that there seems to be a misunderstanding among many users of the internet that when they communicate via the internet, it's as private as though they were in a room with no other person and no listening device or recording device in there. People can see what they are doing online. Anything can be hacked into, regardless of whatever firewalls people put up. And Twitter has the right, I mean, the Library of Congress has the rights to everything that's ever been posted on Twitter from day one.
Absolutely.
So why would Facebook users expect information that would help a marketer, especially demographic information, to be any less private?
I think it has a lot to do with the way that Facebook has approached the use of user information. I think it was maybe about a year ago, maybe 18 months ago, they started these sponsored stories where they actually were using user-generated content. Advertisers were paying for it, and it was showing up in their social networks newsfeed. And I don't think anybody really wants to think that a business is going to profit or utilize something that they've created or that they've placed online for their profit. And I don't know if it's the profit motive, or I don't know, you know, if it's just the fact that we tend to forget that what we put out there is out there and anybody can get access to it. But I think it's a little bit disturbing when you put something up in you place a status update about a product or brand, and then a company can come in and buy that and use it over and over and over again.
Without your permission, without
Absolutely.
Even asking you.
Mm-hmm.
It's some sort of implied consent, but The law has not kept up with technology in that regard.
I don't think so.
What is a sponsored story? I mean, does, you know, Tom go online and write, "I love Chrysler cars," and then Chrysler takes it and puts it in their advertising?
It can be used in that respect. Or lately, what I've seen on my Facebook page is I have friends that have liked products or brands, and they like it for their own. You know, they like Tide, and they select that they like it, and it'll show up in my news feed, and it will say so and so likes Tide, and then Tide puts a great big advertisement in the news feed for me.
Right.
So I think that there are different variations. It used to be all about when people checked in places. You know, if you check in at Panera Bread, then they'll show your entire network that you're there, and it's a way for them to kind of show that one of your friends is a frequenter of that particular restaurant. So sponsored stories can come in a lot of different shapes, and to be honest with you, it changes so much.
Mm-hmm.
It's not until you see it that you think, oh, and it'll say sponsored story right above it, so you know whether or not it's a sponsored story. But I don't think anybody wants to think that something that they're doing or something that they're endorsing is being bought up and used as advertising for another company.
So. We'll take one more quick break. We'll be right back. This is MTSU On the Record.
Specialized training in forensic science prepares tomorrow's professionals through the Forensic Institute for Research and Education, or FIRE. The Forensic Anthropology Search and Recovery Team assists law enforcement with skeletal remains at crime scenes. Legendary forensic scientists provide lectures free to the public, and high school students work realistic crime scenes each summer at our CSI MTSU camp. I'm Dr. Hugh Berryman, Director of FIRE.
For all the latest MTSU information, go to mtsunews.com.
Dr. Michelle Beecham is our guest, Associate Professor of Marketing here at MTSU. We're talking about advertising on Facebook and whether users like it or not. Something that occurred to me is that social media are so relatively new. How reliable are the statistics and the research on its effectiveness, and how much of it is there?
There's a lot out there, but it's just really difficult to kind of mine through and to determine which source you think is a reputable source. It changes so fast that the need for research is always there. So if you were to conduct a story this month, by next month, something new's in place and, you know, the need for new information is out there. That's one of the exciting things I think about social media, and especially social media marketing, is that it changes so fast that it's not something you can learn once and feel like you've got a good grasp of. It's a constant process of keeping up with what's going on.
What makes Facebook different from Twitter and Google with regard to role theory and boundary theory?
One of the things about Google is if you were to get on Google Plus, and that's their kind of answer to Facebook, it's their social networking component, it's 100% advertising free. And whether or not it's going to remain that way is yet to be seen, but there are no ads on Google Plus. So advertising and infringing on role boundaries is really not that big of an issue. In terms of Twitter, the intent of Twitter, the reason why you go on Twitter, is to consume information. It's not really to socialize. I mean, there's a social aspect, but it's more to gather information from different organizations and different groups of people. So I think that the intent when you go on Twitter is to get information. So if there's an advertisement in your Twitter feed, then it's not really that big of a deal. It also doesn't take up a lot of space in your feed. So in Facebook, advertising takes up, you know, you can look at a screen and it'll take up 40% of your screen at one time. So I think that there are some space issues there. And I think the intent when you go on Facebook, it's to engage in your social role, not to gather information about products and brands. So I think that has a lot to do with it.
I can see where that would be annoying, because one of my pet peeves with the way some websites are designed is when they look too busy, they're trying to throw too much information at you at one time. And we're already in an age in which we're bombarded with information from all sides, even when we're not online. So why do you want to look or try to look or comprehend 50 different items, whether they be a combination of news, ads, audio, video, photos, whatever they are, at the same time? Could we just make it nice and clean and clear? for once, but 40% of a web page, that's a lot.
It can be up to 40%, and it depends on what your network's doing, and it depends on, you know, what your demographics are, but it used to be that the advertisements were on the right-hand side, and you could still see your social aspect of Facebook in the middle in your newsfeed, but now they've taken those ads and they've put them into your newsfeed. So it becomes a lot more difficult for you to see what your friends and what your family members and your network's up to. You've got to kind of be careful not to miss what they're doing because they're, you know, their company messages there. So that's been a huge change, and that change has come since the IPO.
We seem to want our cake and eat it too. We want our privacy, and yet at the same time, we want to be able to reach out. But going on Facebook is not like having a clandestine telephone call, or, you know, but the users seem to be saying it's about appropriateness. When you go into church, you don't expect to see a strip show. When you go to a strip club, you don't expect to hear a sermon. We want to define what it is our Facebook experience is all about. On the other hand, the company has to make money.
I think a lot of it has to do with whether or not there's a true competitor to Facebook. I think that
MySpace ain't it.
No, I know. And I don't think Google Plus is it either, because I don't think, you know, I think that people, the trust level of Google lately has really declined, and it hasn't been accepted by the masses yet. So you can't say, I'm going to ditch Facebook and I'm going to get on Google Plus, because a big portion of your network is still going to be on Facebook. So I think that a little healthy competition, something that truly is a competing service, would definitely change, you know, people's perceptions of whether it's appropriate and what they're willing to accept. I also think that the experience is going to be, the expected experience is different based on the group. So for us, that's going to be a lot different than for, you know, a teenager that jumps on, and their expectations and what they're willing to accept and what the experience is going to be a lot different than other markets or other target markets of users.
My suspicion, and just anecdotally, would be that a teenager wouldn't even be thinking about what sorts of advertisements he might be plied with while he's on. He just wants to get online and chat. He's not, you know, concerned with liking this, that, or the other product.
They grew up, and they're growing up, weeding out advertising. Advertising so much more prevalent now that it's almost, they're used to it.
And even the baby boomer generation queues past the commercials on the VCR.
Absolutely.
You know, and or you can eliminate them altogether with TiVo, I think. Could you conceive of a day when a social media entity like Facebook would be owned by the users, like a company, a brick-and-mortar company, being owned by the employees? Is that something that could be envisioned?
I don't know. It's such a foreign animal. You know, social media is like nothing that we've ever seen before in terms of business models, so it's really hard to kind of make that guess. I think that in terms of what they do in the future, they need to make sure that they're offering value to their users. And as long as they perceive value to being on Facebook, Facebook's going to be able to do a lot, you know, and value's all about the benefits of being on the site versus the sacrifice. And I think that advertising is kind of becoming a sacrifice for us, that it's something that we're having to live with in order to reap the benefits of keeping in touch with our social network. And so, you know, with this role theory and boundary theory, when the two roles become integrated, the theory says we're going to put forth time and effort to try to separate them. And I think that that's what people are doing. They're trying to figure out ways to be able to weed through that advertising and figure out ways where they can, you know, keep the boundary around that social role. By increasing the time and effort that we spend in those sorts of behavior, the benefits versus the sacrifice, that's going to change. So the value perceptions from users should decline. Without a true competitor, you know, I think Facebook's going to survive, but I definitely think that there's been a change in user perceptions of the value associated with being on Facebook.
One more quick break. We'll be right back. This is MTSU on the Record.
The Middle East Center at MTSU seeks to promote greater understanding of the politics, history, and culture of this vitally important region of the world. Its mission includes the promotion of outreach programs and faculty research. The center sponsors lectures by Middle East experts and scholarly exchanges. We're especially pleased to offer a new interdisciplinary minor in Middle East Studies with courses in Arabic and Hebrew. This is Dr. Alan Hibbard, Center Director.
For all the latest MTSU information, go to mtsunews.com.
In our final moments with Dr. Michelle Beecham, do you see any evidence that Facebook is listening to its users, is paying attention to feedback from its users about what they want out of the service and how much advertising they're willing to tolerate?
I haven't seen it. I think that they're so focused on investors and stock price right now that users, not that they're not important, they're just not their primary focus at this time. They've put into place mechanisms for people to be able to control advertising a little bit better. You're not going to be able to eliminate it, but there are ways that you could, again, take time and effort to be able to minimize the amount of advertising that you receive. But a lot of it's buried in privacy controls, and a lot of it's not really well known. It's not users are not really educated on how to do that. So the time and effort to be able to keep the social role and the consumer role separate on Facebook, it's increasing. Users are having to be more proactive to, you know, be able to control the information that's being targeted to them.
If you want to go on Facebook, then you have to get to know every aspect of Facebook intimately in order to use it intelligently and to do so in a way that is least invasive to your privacy, in your point of view.
Absolutely. I find myself not really taking the time and effort to go through and figure out what the controls are. Anything that I do almost always comes from someone in my network who'll say, I figured this out, here's how you combat it, or here's how you kind of get around it. So I'm guilty of it for sure, not taking that time and effort to be able to educate myself in the best way about the privacy controls. It's definitely something that should be a priority for Facebook users.
But even with privacy controls, as it has been seen, prospective employers are going to online sites and testing your social media presence if you are a candidate for a job these days. And if they see something posted on your Facebook page that paints you in a bad light, especially if it's something obscene, then you are not likely to get that job, and word might circulate that you are not a good candidate for any other job.
Absolutely.
And that's something else that the advertisers, I suppose, have to take into consideration. Dr. Beecham, once again, the article is Don't Invade My Personal Space, Facebook's Advertising Dilemma, it published in the January-February 2013 edition of the Journal of Applied Business Research. Dr. Michelle Beecham, thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much.
MTSU On the Record, a news and information program about Middle Tennessee State University, is produced by the university's Marketing and Communications Office, which is solely responsible for its content. Read more about MTSU at our website, mtsunews.com. Podcasts of this program are available at mtsunews.com and on iTunes.